Welcome to season 6 of the Sears Close podcast. As you all know, this season I have not been keeping good track of what episode we're on, so episode who knows what, but very excited to have some guests from the north joining us today. So without further ado, take it away, introduce yourselves, and we'll get rolling.
Thank you for having us, Maria and Nico. My name is John Pappas. I direct the Metropolis of Boston Youth Dance Group. We are the folk dance ministry of the Metropolis of Boston. So technically we represent the New England states because it's the Metropolis of Boston has all 6 New England states. And we've been around for 35 years. I have a co-director here with me, Evangelia Costopoulou, and another co-director, Maria Iacopoulou, who could not be with us today because her sister is having a wedding shower.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, so we'll have to let her know that you guys say congratulations. Yeah. So we're the folk dance ministry of the Metropolis here in Boston. We perform a lot. We just had a performance last night for an AHEPA 100-year AHEPA event in the northern part of the state of Massachusetts. And we're really excited this year to have a big folk dance conference in October called the Kefi Dance Conference. But before we get into that, because I'm sure that'll be the meat and potatoes of the podcast today, we are, we've been around. I mean, you might not have heard of us, but we've been all over the place. We've been to FDF, we've been to HDF, we've been to Canada a bunch, we've been to New York. And then also, obviously, we've also been to Greece a whole slew of times. And this year, we're actually going to Greece. We're going to perform in Athens and Santorini as well.
Oh, wow.
So we're really excited about that. It's a busy year for us for our 35th anniversary.
Indeed. Bravo, Sas.
Thank you, Diego. Evangelia, I want you to continue to introduce yourself now.
Well, my name's Evangelia. I've been dancing with the group for a really long time now. We're not going to age ourselves here. But we start dancing from when we're 7. So our dance group, we're pretty unique for the Boston area because we have a structured program in the sense that we have a curriculum that rotates every few years. And starting at age 7, you'll be at level 1. You'll progress through to level 3. And after that, it's the group we call advanced, and that's our performing group. So as John mentioned, all those performances across the country and even internationally, those are with our performing group. And it's what all of our students strive to get to one day. They see the group performing in the costumes that were hand sewn from people in Greece, and they one day want to take a part in showing our heritage and wearing those costumes. Mm-hmm.
So
that's great.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the structured program? Like, how did you guys not only maybe how you came up with that, but how do you really stick to that? Because I would assume that maybe some people are like a little bit like, oh, let's do something different, or they like to give their opinion.
You bring up a really interesting point, my dear, because I have a ton of mothers who want a 5-year-old daughter to or son to dance because they really love dance and everything. And it's interesting where our founder was a dancer for Dorostratu, and she also was in the London School of Dance. So I think that she combined the two programs of traditional Greek folk dance and the ballet school that she was a part of that started them in Tears. And so, I kind of agree with the 7-year-olds aspect just because, like, they've been in elementary education to some extent. They understand that they're sitting behind a desk. They also know their right hand from their left hand, their right foot from their left foot, And I have a 5-year-old daughter, and sometimes, I say, stick out your left foot, and she'll stick out her right, so I know how it goes. And even though she's my daughter, I'm still going to make sure that she doesn't start choreo until 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And that system has worked out really well for us. Sometimes it's a little bit of a problem because once they get, if you figure like a couple of years, so 7 to 9, 9 to 11, 11 to 12, 13, now they're in high school. And if we have like a bottleneck at the top, we really don't have a place for some of those dancers because We have a finite number of costumes. We have a lot of experienced dancers, and now we're going to, it's hard to introduce like five or six kids who don't know any of our advanced level dances to come in and expect them to like thrive. It's very difficult. So sometimes we have a bottleneck with that, and we try to do the best we can with it. But you know, it's a nice problem to have when like you have older dancers that like don't leave, you know, stay because they got so good. I mean, and you guys, I'm sure, can associate with this. You teach them for a long time, and then they hit college and they leave, and you're like, I just spent, you know, 7-8 years teaching you all these tricks, these figuras, and these combinations, and now you're gone. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not bad. It's a good. It's a natural order of things, but it's also really nice when you have people who really enjoy it and want to stay.
One of the comments we get is people that go through our levels build a great foundation for dance. You learn the basic steps, especially if you start at the younger age. And when you make it to the older group, there are dances that we might not know. I mean, Greece is huge. But the ability our dancers have to pick up some more intricate dances is they're able to do it a lot easier than someone who is just coming off the street trying to learn that same dance. So we just build a really good foundation from a young age, and it's great to see all the kids that stick with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I bet. Or even like have the confidence maybe if they're going off to college somewhere outside of the Boston area, you know, to join a dance group if they're in.
Yes.
We actually have dancers, that have come from other states.
And vice versa.
We've met people across the country. Sometimes even traveling for work, you might be in a new state that has a festival different season than you. Mm-hmm. I can't say how many times I've been to other churches or festivals and felt confident in my ability to dance with them.
Yeah.
Right.
And you meet people that way too. You have a pretty big network across the country.
Yeah, that's so good. So good.
The foundation definitely is the key thing. And I think it's important. And it's great that you guys focus on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, you know, so that ballet school aspect was, she kind of, our instructor, Kirianiki Dimotaki-Sokolov, kind of created like a lexicon of steps. So we try not to use like numbers instead. Like, so, you know, Kalamachino is 12 steps. We never really count it out. Like, we usually use a step so that they can recite it in their head to the rhythm. And then we do rhythm, obviously, like when they're really young, we do a lot of clapping, like the level one kids, they do clapping, like, you know, the Kalamachino 7-8, Kashilama 9-8, you know, those types of rhythms so they can hear it. You know, it's a difficult thing. I always say that you can teach steps, but it's very difficult to teach rhythm.
Absolutely. No, I think that's key that you guys are doing that. That's a very basic, I think, an oversight. And I know a lot of people who teach that way, you know, they say don't put numbers to the steps because your mind is working differently than that. It's the rhythm you need to know as far as, you know, really having that foundation and being able to pick up dances.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason.
As you get older, you're doing your solos. Those most of the time are, go for it. You know, you just need to know the steps, the basic rhythm.
Right.
Yeah.
And just put it together.
Yeah. Or even where you're, you know, playing with that rhythm, you're, you know, you have that offset or half beat and whatnot, then you're getting back on because you need to do something with the figura or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Being a dance group in Boston, you know, we're under the metropolis, like John mentioned, but another thing that sets us apart is our connection to Dora Stratu. Mm-hmm. And John, you can explain our affiliation with Dora Stratu and the CID.
So I don't know. I'm sure there's other groups that are CID certified. I imagine that you guys have heard of the International Council of Dance.
Why don't you talk about it a little bit? Because we actually on the West Coast, not as much.
It's a United Nations program, so it's basically you're recognized internationally as being, you know, certified in your, you know, your genre of choro, of dance. And so we are a certified organization, the International Council of Dance and UNESCO. And we're also certified with Dora Stratu. We have a good relationship with Dora Stratu, and basically they certified that we teach in their manner, which, you know, I know a lot of people that are you know, very purist when it comes to folk dance, and you might have a different, like, you know, outlook on Dorostratu. But I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like almost everybody, you know, has been through that place, you know, as mm-hmm. a dancer or a musician. And, so we're really proud of that affiliation. And, you know, when we're going to perform in Athens this year, it will be at Dorostratu's Theater. And then Santa Pini obviously is a different animal that we were invited to perform out there, which was really awesome. So that's our affiliation in terms of like being recognized from Dorostratu and the UNESCO program, CID.
Yeah. You know, I think that's important to bring up. And you're so right. Like, there are different schools of thought. Yet, in my opinion, there is a place for people who have invested their time and their energy into research, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, some people definitely feel a certain way, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with feeling the opposite way either. But it's interesting to hear about, you know, the certification and stuff like that, because the reality is that what the program that Dorostratu built, right, is what that shows is that it's replicative, and mm-hmm. and that has a place if you're creating a school of dance, right? Which in theory, right. that's what they want people to replicate. There's a place for that. Now, the beauty of that too is that if you all are really focusing on foundations and how you describe through the leveling and teaching people to understand, you know, the rhythmic aspects of the dance as opposed to like counting by numbers, mm-hmm. that gives people a foundation that they can grow upon. Right. And that's what we want to do. You know, I know it's so interesting when you talk to people and they're like, I'm not the best teacher because I don't know how to express how to do the steps. Perhaps sometimes there's a lack of, you know, that formal, let's call it that, air quotes, instruction about sort of how to deliver, how to teach, you know, a syncopated rhythm. Right. I think we can all think back to teaching, like, for example, like Busheno. I remember when I brought that to a church in DC and they were like, wait, what? And I was like, okay, just feel it. It's going to feel off. And they're like, what's the numbers? And I'm like, we're not doing this. This is not paint by numbers. You know what I mean? Because right. it's that syncopation. It's so hard to express that as an instructor. So, I mean, good for you guys. I think that's really unique. And I think, you know, congratulations that you went for that certification, because that's a way to validate, right? You know, right. we don't necessarily have that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we have that in the Greek folk dance community. And, you know, I think validation is important because otherwise, what are we doing? I mean, when I took over the program 20 something years ago, I felt like I had a bigger responsibility of just besides just showing Petrozali. I had to know what was like, what's correct. What does Petrozali mean? Like, you know, I went to a place, and I don't want to name it, where they danced Petrozali, and they said it's five crazy steps. That's what the word means, translated. And I thought to myself, I said nothing, but I just said, you know, that is not correct. If you don't know what it is, don't try and translate it literally, you know, or whatever. And so I found myself like trying to, I did a lot of research on my own to figure out, you know, what am I showing and why am I showing it? Mm-hmm. So that's good. Part of why we ended up going into that certification realm, because we just wanted to make sure that we were legitimate, mm-hmm. because there's nothing worse than being like a quote unquote charlatan when it comes to, you know, anything that you do, whether it's mm-hmm. like, I'm a dentist, you know, I can't fake doing a filling improperly because it's going to be a problem pretty quickly.
Right. And so please don't
is right. So you know, that's basically why I felt like we needed to qualify ourselves, and I think we've done a pretty decent job at that, you know, through the years.
Another thing that sets our program apart in our curriculum is we're obviously teaching Greek dance. There's meanings behind some of these dances, some of the costumes we wear, whether they're, you know, day costumes, wedding costumes, and just like meanings with every fortis, yeah. But each region also has their own history. So as we teach dances from a certain region, we do a project every year. So the kids will get together and we'll do, you know, a class project. So this year, for example, we were teaching Macedonia in the fall, and the kids are making replicas of the Savisa, or the son of the Gina. So, you know, we do a little history lesson during one class on what these mean, why is it important, where in history did it come from, and they get a little more culture that way too. So it's, we're learning more about our heritage, not just a couple of dances that we learned, but, you know, why is it important and what went on in that region.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you guys is process, I guess, of training your teachers. Let's say I put it that way, you know, is it something that, do you guys have, whether it's a waiting list or a special program for them, special, but what kind of, I guess, what kind of method do you guys use for new teachers or bringing people in who want to teach in your program?
Very good question. We generally don't bring teachers from the outside, just because it's a whole different animal. And I don't want to say that we're like reclusive or anything like that, but it's just, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge. And never mind the fact that, you know, Greek dance teachers don't necessarily grow on trees. You know, it's not like people, I don't have like a waiting list of instructors that are like, hey, let me teach as a volunteer a bunch of kids, you know.
But you need someone that built that foundation through the program too. Yeah. It's not something you can just teach in a day or even in a week.
So usually we try and pick dancers in our older level, that in our advanced level, that have a good grasp of the steps and also seem to want to have an ability to give back, you know. And so we generally pick a couple of those dancers and we assign them to one of the communities that we teach in, and they basically are the TA for that program, and that they get to see like they're the lead instructor and the way they do their class. And specifically, you know, we start off every class with warm-up steps. So back to that whole lexicon of steps, we basically have every, you know, and obviously as you progress down the line, you have more difficult warm-up steps, you know, and so that's how we start off. And the TAs basically, you know, get indoctrinated, but get trained that way.
It's called like on-hands training.
Yeah,
really? It's on, hands-on. OJT.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, on the job training.
No, fantastic. And I like that you guys brought that up, because that was something I actually didn't put together till I was in a group in Greece, saw them do this, and they just do basic, just like anything, any exercise, you warm up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other than just like, okay, let's get right into this. Like, no, you can do some basic steps, and it helps, especially the younger kids, them focus, them transition into, oh, it's time to learn kind of thing, you know? So, you know, because obviously they're there, they see their friends, they get excited, all that fun stuff.
Well, you know, Nico, Joro is physical, it's phys ed, yeah. You know? And, you know, any sport, I mean, I play hockey, every sport has drills. You know, you part of the high school team, you're not going to really, it's not like it's scrimmaging for an hour and a half on the ice or on the basketball court. You're going to do drills, you know, shuttle runs for basketball, free throws, layups, all
your skills.
Yeah. So it's the same idea. That's how, you know, that's why we beat, I want to say beat that over the head, but we like definitely, you know, pound that in so that they can have a good foundation.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Bravo, Sus. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
How many communities do you teach in across the Boston area or even beyond, I guess?
Right now we're in 4 communities. You know, COVID hit us all a little bit and people stopped dancing for some time, but, you know, we've reached back out and there's 4 communities we're pretty strong in right now.
Yeah. Around the city of Boston, pretty much. The one that's a little bit further away is the city of Lowell, which I don't know if you guys know Lowell, but I'll give you a little quick history on Lowell. Lowell has a Yetriada, which is the third oldest church in the United States. They actually have an all day Greek school. So it's a parochial school that spends a good amount of their week on Greek stuff, Greek language and whatnot, and we teach in there. as well. But generally speaking, our communities are within the greater Boston area and then Lowell.
Awesome. And for people who are not familiar with Boston, first of all, you need to go. It's such a historic, cool city. I was lucky enough to live there for a little bit when I was in my last semester of nursing school. It was short time, but like, go to Boston, number one. Number two, realize that there are so many Greek churches in the area. Like, it's so densely populated with Greek churches. And also, like, grab a coffee and go cruise the Freedom Trail and just walk around and like learn about history. Like, do yourself a favor and go. And you know what? There's probably a really good time to go because you guys are hosting a conference. That was like a very smooth transition.
It was. I didn't even plan that. Smooth move.
I didn't even plan that. Talk to us about what's going on in October and what people can expect and everything like that.
So we're really excited about having this conference, the Cafe Dance Conference. We had a tough time trying to name it because there's a radio station in Boston called Cafe FM. But we got their blessing. Anyway, we're really excited about it. Obviously, like I had mentioned earlier, we've been all over the country, Canada, you know, La Grafia, Glutamamia, specifically HDF, FDF, all these other places and whatnot. And we felt like we're overdue to do this. You know, we feel like because we're like a folk dance ministry, we felt like it was an opportunity and it's almost our responsibility in a lot of ways to put something on like this. And it's a celebration of our heritage. It's not a competition. There will be dance groups dancing, I'm sure, from all over, but we don't want to make it, you know, you get first place, you get second place. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I think it's great. And obviously, the results speak for themselves. I mean, HDF and FDF are so big. I mean, I don't think we could even fathom putting on something to that magnitude. But, you know, having said that, we're really excited to have instructors from Greece. And I'm going to have Evangelia talk about them for a little bit. And then also we have a band from outside the area as well that's going to come on. So, Evangelia?
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, too, there are a lot of Greeks in Boston and from all different parts of Greece. It's a really huge community. And you could see the instructors that are coming from Greece to teach also reflect that. So first up, we have an instructor from Epiros. He's going to teach us Epirotika. He's also a singer. He is also really well known in all of the Greek circles. So Kosta Mitsis is his name, which I'm sure you guys are familiar.
Yeah, we are.
Yes. Kosta's very excited to come. I messaged him yesterday that we were going to be on this podcast and he said, hi. And, you know, how do you not like love the guy? You know, he's so magnetic and he's going to be great. We're really excited to have him. And also another big name for us is Nikos Zunatsidis, who's going to be teaching some Podiaka as well. And I feel like, you know, it's interesting. We have a lot of Podi in the area, and then Connecticut has a lot of Podi. But I feel like everywhere you mention, like any city or town you mention in the United States, has a lot of Podi. So, you know, I know that a lot of the local Podi are really excited to see that Nikos Yonatsidis is coming. Mm-hmm. And he's a really great guy. I remember meeting him a long time ago in Montreal. And, you know, we're really excited to have him. Mary Markaki is a Kritikia. She lives in Athens. Actually, most of them live in Athens anyway. But she has a nice little connection with us because she danced with Doris Stratou for a long time. And she's been all over the Europe and in the U.S. So a great instructor and great, you know, like traveling instructor.
We have a lot of Kutipiki here in Boston too, and even in New York. So we have a lot of Cretans very excited for Mary to come join us.
Yeah. That's right.
We're excited too.
Great.
And then lastly, we have Zaharoula Hadjikostadinou and Andoni Dalari from Lero. Specifically though, we're having them do Tilo, Nisiro, and Ko. after discussing it with her and him a little bit, kind of came to the conclusion that this would probably be the better region to show. I think it's been a little while since they've been here and shown it. So we're excited about that. So all our instructors are very good. You know, I've been instructed by them and just really excited to have them. And then lastly, we have a strong connection with the Montreal kids, and DSC is going to come and play both nights.
Nice.
Fantastic.
That weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. That's that'll be a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sold. So,
yeah, exactly.
look for airfare.
Right. Exactly. Tell us how to register. Actually, let's talk about that. So, people can find out information online. You guys have your Instagram page up and, you know, teasing some of the stuff, but is there going to be like a website or like a landing page for this, a Facebook group, all that good stuff?
There are actually both. So we do have a Facebook page up for our dance group and for the GIFI Dance Conference specifically, where all the information's going. You're right, we do have an Instagram specifically for the GIFI Dance Conference. We also have a website. So it's GreekFolkDance.org. On there, you'll find information about our group, and there's also all the information currently available on the conference. Registrations are going live on a week from tomorrow.
Wow.
So, yeah, so get excited, get ready to register. Monday, April 22nd, we will go live. So there'll be two registration levels. There's a workshop attendee level for everyone who's interested in coming to learn the dances from the instructors we're bringing in. And then there's a chaperone registration level, which is intended for friends and family traveling with those from other, you know, cities, states, countries to enjoy the night activities. So aside from the workshops, we do have more planned. So there's four workshops. We're also having a Glendy on Saturday night. And there'll be a formal gala on Sunday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Nice. And, you know, you mentioned Boston and history and whatnot. And, you know, we're basically doing it on Columbus Day weekend. Well, it's a long weekend, obviously. It's a great time to come to Boston. You know, it's not too cold yet. Usually good weather. It doesn't really rain much in October. It's kind of a dry month, which is good. And then it's also a long weekend for the Canadians as well. So Thanksgiving. So kind of
that works out really well. Yeah. Good job. Good call.
Yeah. So, you know, we are definitely inclusive with the Canadians and hopefully they will come along.
Yeah. I mean, Boston in the fall is amazing. Most people travel here. School started. We have tons of things going on at the river or just downtown Boston is great to walk around or drive around. You'll see the leaves changing colors, falling. So for those who are traveling with friends or family that are attending the workshops, there's plenty to do in October.
Yeah.
So totally. Very strategic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I can definitely vouch for that. I feel like rent a kayak and go kayaking or canoeing on the Charles. It sounds way scarier than it is. Just it's not. during it, you might be a little terrified, but just stay away from the big boats. You'll be fine. But it's such a cool way to see the city, you know, and like there's so much to do in Boston. It's a great like food town if you're a foodie. And you know, I'm making the gross assumption that many people listening have not necessarily dove into Boston as much as, you know, perhaps we have, but and obviously you guys from living there, but I think it's such a wonderful opportunity, and it's really great to see that people are reinvigorating these conferences, because it's so hard to plan these things. It's a lot up front, right? There's, you know, expenses with this. It's also people's time that takes to plan it. So kudos to you guys for, you know, engaging in this and really making it happen. Because I think we're starting to see conferences pop up across the country that have very much the same intent, like come and learn, come and have good fellowship, come and have a lot of fun, you know? And that's so important, because that is what perpetuates and continues people's desire to, you know, grow in their dance and also to do other things, right? To even, you know, become an instructor or bring a different region, you know, to their group.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's why You know, I mean, the Ganesha is not really like the most tapped region, you know, compared to other places. So the reality is like it's a great opportunity to learn those areas. And then, you know, Bodhyaka, if you're not Bodhyo, is, you know, just a whole different thing. It's really difficult. But Nico is such a great instructor. You know, to the point about Boston and restaurants and whatnot, you know, there's been a lot of Greek restaurants that have popped up. And I think Greek restaurants in general in the United States have kind of popped up. But, you know, Maria, you're familiar with the New York ones. We have two Limanis here.
Nice.
And, I heard recently that Avra is going to open up in Back Bay around the corner from me.
Oh, I love Back Bay area.
You know, but you're right. These things do take a lot of planning. Again, we are the folk dance ministry, but we're trying to not stay away from the religious component, but we have a priest who was a former dancer for us, and he is the presiding priest over a big community up here in Lynn, Massachusetts. And, you know, he's excited to maybe take part, and we're trying to figure out a way to, you know, incorporate a little bit of, you know, what Hellenic College is. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize that Hellenic College is like the only place in the United States where the priests come from. Mm-hmm. And I don't really realize that until I go to like somewhere else in the United States and they say, oh, where are you from? I'm from Boston. Oh, wow, I lived in Boston. I'm like, what? How did you live in Boston? Well, how wouldn't they? They went to Hellenic College for four years. You know? So we're going to try and see if we can incorporate at least somewhat of a visit to the campus. So some people who are interested, maybe the chaperones or whatnot, get an opportunity to see, you know, this is the Archbishop Iacobus Library. This is the, you know, this is the Maiotis Cultural Center, which is where we practice out of. Mm-hmm. You know, the campus is really nice. So, you know, we're working on that logistically. But, you know, our main focus is just bringing people together from all over the place and enjoying our heritage, because that's what it's all about.
Awesome. I totally second that. I think Hellenic College is so special and the chapel is really beautiful. So when people go to the conference, if you're looking for a place to go to church on Sunday, I would recommend going to church there. It's just a very different experience with all the seminarians, and the chanting is amazing. Where will the workshops take place? Do you guys have that detail kind of ironed out?
Yeah, we basically do. The hotel that the gala and where the attendees will be staying at is the Newton Marriott, which is about 10 minutes from Hellenic College. Mm-hmm. And then the actual workshops themselves will be occurring in this really nice state-of-the-art facility called Waltham Woods, which is about 10 minutes down the road from the Newton Marriott. And obviously with, you know, we're going to have to transport. So we're going to have buses that will go in between the locations.
Wow. Oh, great.
Yeah. It's still really close to the city. I think Newton's only 20 minutes max of a drive. And there's public transit that takes you right downtown. So,
and also, you know, for people that maybe are traveling from New York, as an example, you can park no problem. Whereas Boston, you know,
it's a little harder.
A little bit of
might get towed. You might,
yeah.
So definitely a lot cleaner this way. It's a little bit out of the city, but it's, I mean, you know, you can see the city from there. It's very easy to get in. 10 minutes, not even. So you know, it's very conducive.
Definitely sounds like you guys thought this through, so good job.
Be more fine details to iron out, but we're excited.
That's so great. And I'm really pumped. I actually just texted someone and I was like, I'm podcasting right now with the Boston group, make sure you book your tickets.
I actually literally did the same thing.
this is really, I think it's going to be great. And I can't stress enough, like, there's another workshop that's coming back, in Tarpon Springs, Epiphany Weekend, WDC is coming back as well. And, you know, years ago, that was like the thing to go to. Right. So, you know, but they're doing it kind of in the same vein. They realize like, we have to bring this back. We have to bring instructors and really, you know, get people to kind of join together. And I just think that's the best way to do it. Same thing with Anixi that's in Charlotte, you know, it's the same principle. And then you obviously have like the huge Canadian conferences and Nico, I think we learned from Nico in Canada, right?
In Rafia, yeah.
That feels like forever ago, I feel like.
It does, right? It does feel forever ago. But I want to say, was it 2011 maybe?
I want to say that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, we'll go. I don't want to say that's correct, but
right. My knees might tell me
it doesn't seem that long ago. Oh, it was. Yeah. It's just like, oh, yeah, just, you know.
Yeah, it was like 4 years ago. Cool.
Nope. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. We went to La Grafia in last May, and you know, they proceeded to tell me, Mike Patazzi and a couple other people who have been very instrumental in La Grafia's success, that my group has come to every single thing that they've ever done. I didn't expect to hear that because I just figured, like, you know, everybody goes, the same people go, you know.
Yeah.
But because we had been going in the 90s when it wasn't called La Grafia, but it was called, you know, Hellenic Dance Conference or something. Mm-hmm. I forget exactly what it was called, but it was La Troupe's thing. Mm-hmm. And Sudaki is what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the same thing, odd number, every 2 years they would have something in May.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're really excited to have VSE as a result, because they just, I know I grew up with those kids almost, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. they're probably a little bit younger than me, but I've seen them so often. We have a great relationship with the two Panayotides, Harry, and then Chris Dasakli. I know his sister really well, you know, so it's just, it's a nice little, you know, coming home for all of them in a lot of ways. So we're really excited.
Yeah, absolutely. And they definitely jam with Costa really well too. So
it's
going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And something too, like, you know, I think a lot of people think about Costa and they think about his singing, right? And they think about him as like kind of a performer. I find his teaching to be really, really exceptional in the way that he can kind of open up the door to what he teaches for people to dig into. Because I think sometimes like people might say like, oh, Ipiros, it's so boring, it's so slow, it's so this, right? Mm-hmm. Certainly it's slow. Yes, we understand that, but there's so much depth to it. You just have to like peel back the layers. And he really, I think his teaching style invites you to dig into that a little bit more and understand like it's not necessarily the history behind the dances, but the substance, you know, behind the steps a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Epiros is a unique region. I mean, every region's unique, right? But I find Epiros' musicality to be so different versus some of the other areas. And, you know, he's just so, what you said is accurate, because first of all, it's his like personality, you know. You could have Kritika as an example, since like we'll go the complete opposite, right? In a lot of ways, you could have Kritika, if it's the running instructor, then it doesn't really matter, you know, what the material can be sometimes. So, I mean, I was a classics major and I had a great professor, I took a class by accident, you know, and, you know, he was such a great professor that I ended up majoring in it. You know, because of him more than anything else. And yeah, I'm Greek, so I've got an innate interest in it, and I probably would have forced it a little bit, but like I didn't have to, you know. And I think with Costa's teaching style, he's so good at, you know, his regions. I have to talk to him, because I don't exactly know what region we want to do, but you know, obviously something from Epiros. We haven't nailed it down just yet.
Yeah.
There won't be a lack of material, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely not. Oh, that's so wonderful. So to kind of depart from the workshop a little bit and to talk, you know, kind of to round out the episode, we always ask people similar types of questions, but what advice would you both have for people who are either currently teaching a group, growing in their, you know, dance worlds that maybe they can teach? Like, what's the biggest piece of advice that you could give somebody, you know, who might want to find themselves in a similar spot as you all in the future?
Yeah. So we're all doing this for a similar reason. We want to keep up our heritage and give back to the community. It's easier said than done. You know, we have good days, we have bad days. Can't say every practice goes smoothly. Sometimes you might have a kid acting out. But you know, you got to take it day by day and stick with it, because in the end, everyone who's been through the program and has learned really enjoys it. And you can see the impact you're making on the community. So it doesn't happen overnight. It definitely takes time to build up and, you know, to get the interest to stick. But in the end, that's why we have such a strong community here. It's because of people that volunteer their time and, you know, stick with it. So it's not a breeze. It's not a walk in the park, but it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's like definitely the prevailing point. In terms of like nitty gritty, though, I think that I've found it more effective to be repetitive, because, you know, all of the stuff that we're teaching is kind of muscle memory. So I, especially with the younger kids, we dance the same dances for a while until I feel like the majority have mastered it, and then we can move on to the other thing that I don't do is I try not, and I think this is a pretty standard exercise, but I don't single out kids. You know, if one or two kids haven't picked it up, you know, I might say a few corrective things in the circle, but I'm not going to single the kid out, because you don't need to embarrass anybody or make them feel, you know, insecure. And especially at a young age and even an older age. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, all of us, like, psychologically, we want, you know, justification, clarification, that what we're doing is good. Everybody kind of likes the pat on the back, and especially kids, especially high school kids, everybody is in that same boat. So, you know, I grew up in a very different way with my instructor. She you know, not beat you down, but she had like the old school of thought of being like, you know, more, I'm going to say militaristic, you know, approach. Yeah. And that's kind of changed, you know, society's changed. So, you know, positive reinforcement is the way to go. And, you know, that's basically what we do, repetition and positive reinforcement.
Yeah. Good for you guys. I think you never know what kids come into a classroom with, you know, like what baggage they come in with. And, I think there's a way to be corrective, and there's definitely a way to not be corrective, especially with young kids, because you really never know what, I mean, and high schoolers too, but I'm thinking of like the little ones. You don't know what's going on outside the walls of your classroom.
You know? And the kids are building, you know, a support system too. So they might've had a rough day at school. They don't go to the same school, but they're meeting other kids. They can let it off of their chest and get other opinions. We form a little community, and it's great to see.
Yeah, I think that's so important.
What kind of legacy do you guys want to leave behind? What's, again, it kind of ties in with this, what's the purpose of your, or if anything, the motivation behind why you guys do this, and again, what you want to leave behind or pass on?
I think that, you know, the legacy is the same legacy that we were left with. Now that we run the program, right? My instructor, along with the Metropolitan, who was at the time a bishop, because it was dioceses at the time, and now it's metropolises. You know, their idea was to, you know, increase the awareness and love of the Greek heritage through fellowship and dance, and also, you know, some of the cultural, you know, aspects of dance, be it like Evangelia said about the Sarissa and the Gibberigina star. Our legacy is the same. We want to perpetuate the Greek heritage. You know, obviously, as the folk dance ministry of the metropolis, we're the only aspect that's Greek heritage. You know, everything else is a religion, which is great, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've got a different little branch that is our mission, is to keep going with the Greek heritage and instill that in the next generations coming behind us, because that's basically what we were left with before. And I think it's super important. I feel like, you know, the one thing about HDF and FDF that's really great is the fact that they're bringing so many young people together. you know, people from Seattle and people from Phoenix that like would otherwise never meet each other, you know, meet each other every year in February, you know, and they can kind of recap what their year was right like. And now they're, you know, they follow each other on social media, which is a great connector, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's obviously some negatives to social media, but, you know, the idea that like FDF and HDF have done that is just very, really, really commendable, and for such a long time too. So that's what we would like our legacy in this area to be, is, you know, instilling the culture in the younger generations. Yeah.
Definitely second that. I remember my mom driving me to dance practices, and I'm sure, John, you remember your mom. They were very heavily involved with the program when it was founded, and we want to make sure there's someone there to keep that going for generations to come. So it's, yeah, you know, a lot of hours of volunteering, a lot of hours of making sure that we're leaving something tangible behind, that we don't lose our culture. We are far away from Greece. Someone has to keep it up. And it's really what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, we're a little bit of an endangered species, right? You know, as far as Greeks go, like in the United States, like the further away you get, the further along the generations get, the more challenging it is to maintain that identity. And, you know, now that I have a little daughter, you know, it means more to me to make sure that she's got something to go to. And the other thing, you know, is that like a lot of times our older kids always have practice on Friday night, and they love dance, and the parents love dance. They also know that on Friday nights they're with a bunch of Greek kids, you know, doing something, yeah, instead of like doing who knows what.
Exactly.
So that's also something that, you know, is a side effect, but it's a good one. It's a really good, you know, effect of what we do, and so we're happy about that. You know, I've always said I could never be a Goya advisor, because it would be, not that there's anything wrong with being a Goya advisor, there's a huge thing, but I'm glad that I get to impart some knowledge, and they're doing something on a weekly basis that's actually productive for them, in the sense that they're learning about their heritage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, without a doubt.
What's a good way, if someone wants to get in contact with you guys, or people to be able to find out more information about your program? You know, I know there's a social media outlets, website. You guys want to give us some, the people listening, some pointers if they have questions for you or want to look more into your program?
Yeah, I mean, definitely you could reach us on our social media, but you could also reach us through our website. There's links to our email. So our website's greekfolkdance.org, and our email is greekfolkdance@aol.com. You know, we regularly check all messages that come through both outlets, but we're also checking our social media. So we have a Facebook, we have Instagram for both the dance group and Giphy. There's lots of ways you could find us and reach out.
Yeah, and the Instagram is Metropolis of Boston Dance Group, and the CAFE conference is CAFE Dance Conference. So that's where we're at on Instagram, and also Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. So like and subscribe.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. And if people are going to be in Greece this summer, can you share the dates that you'll be performing?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you. So from July 21 to 28, the group will be in Athens and Santorini. 22 to 24 is in Thorastratu. We're performing on the 24th. And in Santorini, we're performing on the 26th and 27th. In Santorini, it will be in Ia and also in Pirgo in Santorini. And I don't know which day is which yet, but it's most likely going to be Ia and then Pirgo. Friday, that's a Friday and a Saturday, and then the 24th I think is a Wednesday. Mm-hmm.